Good morning to you all. This is Jane reading to you from the Herald and Review on a beautiful, warm 29th of April. I'm going to read an article that caught my eye yesterday, a local Illinois story. Illinois lawmakers consider banning plastic bags for large retailers. The question of paper or plastic could soon be a thing of the past at big box stores, supermarkets, and retail chains in Illinois. State lawmakers are considering legislation that would ban the distribution of plastic bags at major retailers such as Walmart and Target, grocery stores like Hy-Vee and Kroger, and specialty stores like Kohl's and Barnes & Noble. The bill, sponsored by Senator Christina Castro, a Democrat of Elgin, is intended to prevent more plastic pollution and encourage the use of recycled or reusable alternatives. "You're just trying to change human behavior," Castro told Lee Enterprises in an interview. "You want people to use more recyclable-type bags, boxes, or whatnot. And by banning plastic bags, it does change habits." Under the proposal, big box stores would no longer be allowed to distribute plastic bags. Instead, they could offer recyclable paper bags at a cost of 10 cents, similar to existing practices at Aldi. This is to encourage the retailer to shift from plastic to paper. The legislation would exempt retailers with 12 or fewer locations and fewer than 250 employees nationwide, gas stations with a footprint of less than 5,000 square feet, and restaurants. The bill has also been amended to delay implementation until January 2029, giving major retailers more time to phase out plastic. Jennifer Walling, executive director of the Illinois Environmental Council, has been working for more than 12 years on the bill to reduce the use of plastic bags. She believes this is the year it will make it across the finish line. "Plastic bags are a huge percentage of litter," Walling said. "They clog infrastructure. They're also very bad for our curbside recycling because people think they can put plastic bags in the curbside recycling bin, and it clogs machines, gets into farm equipment, clogs sewer drains. It's also terrible for human health and the environment and wildlife." There have been efforts to tackle these issues in the past. In 2012, the state legislature approved a bipartisan bill that would have required plastic bag manufacturers to register with the Illinois EPA and set up recycling programs with collection sites across the state. However, then-Governor Pat Quinn vetoed the bill amid opposition from environmental groups. Their main objection was over the inclusion of a home rule preemption that would have prevented local governments from enacting even tighter regulations, including outright bans. Senator Terry Link, at the time, had brokered a deal with the environmentalists, and the environmentalists backed out of it, Illinois Retail Merchants Association President and CEO Rob Carr said. And that pretty much killed it until recently. "What made it for us is there's going to be a uniform standard across the state." In the intervening years, a handful of Illinois cities, including Chicago, attempted to reduce the use of plastic bags by placing a 10-cent fee on single-use bags. "It worked in the beginning, but eventually the habit faded," Walling said. But now, she believes, the bill could pass as it provides a full ban coupled with a uniform fee for paper bags. Nick Fitch, director of Hy-Vee in Bloomington, said he and other store leaders believe a single-use plastic bag ban is on the horizon, but they aren't too concerned. "We operate stores in 9 different states, and none of those states currently have a plastic ban, so it would be new for Hy-Vee," Fitch said. "But I think as we have relationships with other retailers in other states that have been impacted, it's kind of just learning from them and adopting a lot of the things that they have done." Hy-Vee stores currently offer paper bags in addition to plastic. Across the board nature of the proposed ban also helped to remove opposition from business groups, which often are wary of regulation via a varying patchwork of local ordinances. IRMA, the Trade Association for Illinois Retailers, was opposed to this bill in the past, but through talks with Castro and environmental groups like the Illinois Environmental Council, it is now neutral. This proposal represents a measured approach that balances the ability of retailers to respond to changing consumer demands while maintaining the flexibility businesses need to thrive, IRMA Senior Vice President of Government Relations, Alec Laird, told Lee Enterprises in a statement. We thank Senator Christina Castro for her dedicated efforts to bring retailers and environmental groups together to negotiate a solution that is workable for all. There remains some opposition to the bill. The Illinois Municipal League, which advocates for states, cities, and towns, is opposed because the bill would preempt the home rule authority of cities and towns. State Senator Don DeWitt, Republican of St. Charles, said he supports eliminating plastic bags but opposes the fee for using recyclable paper bags. I love this half of the bill, DeWitt said, but to charge people to do the right thing, I guess, is what it boils down to for me. To use a totally 100% recyclable product and pass that expense on to the consumer, I think, is the wrong way to address this. DeWitt also questioned why retailers should now be compensated for offering paper bags when they were never compensated for plastic ones. The measure has not yet received a vote in the Senate, Castro said. The delay was strategic, as the proposal requires a supermajority vote due to its preemption of home rule authority. That's why I feel it's so important to have everyone back in order to vote. The Illinois Senate returns to Springfield April 29th. That's today. And here's a fun community service article for all you quilters or quilting fans, headlined, Batting, Basting, and Binding Brings Quilters Together. Creating a quilt requires keen eyes and a focused mind, as well as an open heart. You have to stop and think about how to put some quilts together, Sharon Lanter said. A group of local quilters meet once a week in an Elwin house devoted to their craft. Even the shower curtain rod and leftover ping pong table are used in organizing the materials. Except the basement, we don't use it, Jeanette Pickerel said. The time spent together in the group often leaves the quilters in stitches, ha ha. But anyone who is interested in quilting is invited into the fold. They can pin, because anybody can put a safety pin in the quilt. They can deliver quilts. And if they just want to sit around and talk and make coffee, they're welcome to do that, too. Each member will contribute in a way she feels most comfortable, the quilters said. One member of the group doesn't attend the meetings but still wants to be a part of the group. She's 99 and can't take the steps, so I take stuff to her. Having met as members of the United Methodist Church in Elwin, the women have all their quilting supplies gathered in the parsonage located next door to the church. The group began creating the artistic blankets in 2011 with the goal of giving them away. The blankets were originally created to help others in the church through their suffering, including after the death of a loved one or while someone was in the hospital. It's just when we think they need the most cheering up, Pickerel said. They might feel like they needed a quilt to cuddle up with, Lanter added. The quilters sometimes add a hidden pocket. You can take your candy or your secret book and put it there, Pickerel said. The sizes range from small lap quilts to large bedspreads. The group has been able to make extra blankets that are ready when needed. The overabundance has been taken to children's groups in Bloomington. Other local organizations that have received donations of quilts include Dove Incorporated and Salvation Army, as well as individuals. Currently, the group consists of four ladies meeting at 9 a.m. on Tuesdays. They meet again at 9 a.m. on the first Wednesday of the month. Winter meetings were sparse, according to Lanter. We're a bunch of chickens, especially when it's nasty out, she said. The experience among the group ranges. Some are still kind of learning, Lanter said. Making quilts is a different idea, so they help each other out. Although the first floor of the house stores the equipment and tools, the second floor of the parsonage has rooms devoted to cloth organized by colors, patterns, and materials. The quilt's designs range depending on the mood of the quilter, although they sometimes steal ideas from magazines and books. We do whatever we feel like doing, Lanter said. Those who want to try their hand at quilting can learn from the experienced members. We wouldn't turn them away, Lanter said. We would help them as much as we can. Some of the quilters are known for creating color-coordinating patterns. Other members of the group, however, may match pieces of materials simply because they are colorful. We have people that just put them together, and sometimes they turn out beautiful, too, Susie Miller said. Quilter Jania Harris encouraged a few of her great-grandchildren to participate in the group. One of them learned to sew at school, and others just followed suit, she said. Although the group originally met at the church, they welcome all members of the community who have an interest in quilting. We have a good time, Lanter said, but we really need some more people to help us. The discussions revolve around quilting and maybe senior citizens topics. Considering how uncomfortable people are about certain conversations, we stick to quilting, Miller said. If you want to know about our church, we'll tell you, Lanter said. And here's a health story that I've been following concerning Central Illinois. The headline is, Dead Rabbit and Squirrel in Central Illinois Test Positive for a Rare Bacterial Disease. A dead rabbit found in Central Illinois has tested positive for a bacterial disease, prompting the local health department to urge residents to monitor their families and pets for signs of the illness. The rabbit infected with tularemia was found in the Douglas County city of Tuscola after weeks of reports of ill and dead squirrels in nearby Urbana. One of the rodents had also tested positive for the disease, which is rare but serious and can affect animals and humans. The presence of infected wildlife may indicate an increased risk of exposure in the area, the Douglas County Health Department said in a Thursday statement, echoing an announcement made by the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District 3 days earlier about local squirrel deaths. According to the Illinois Department of Public Health, tularemia, sometimes colloquially called rabbit fever, is caused by Francisella tularensis bacteria, mostly found in rodents, rabbits, and hares. About 100 to 200 cases are reported every year in the country, and it naturally occurs in all states except Hawaii. Illinois reported 9 cases in 2023, behind 7 other states, Missouri, Kansas, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Arkansas, Colorado, and Kentucky. Pets can become infected if they come into contact with or eat an infected animal or breathe in or ingest contaminated food or water. They can also be exposed to the disease through tick and flea bites. Pet owners should watch for signs of illness and consult a veterinarian with concerns, according to Douglas County health officials. The department also urges that cats and dogs not be allowed to roam outdoors unsupervised and be protected from tick bites. While tularemia has not been found to spread between people, humans can catch it by being bitten by an infected tick, deer fly, or other insect. Skinned contact with infected animals, eating or drinking contaminated food or water, or breathing in the bacteria during farming or landscaping activities if a tractor or mower runs over an infected animal's carcass. Health officials recommend wearing EPA-registered insect repellent and long clothing outdoors, not drinking untreated surface water, and not handling sick or dead wild animals unless wearing gloves. Symptoms in humans include fever, chills, muscle pain or tenderness, and lack of energy. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, tularemia manifests in 6 main types with different signs and symptoms depending on how the bacteria enters the body, through skin, eyes, mouth, or lungs. How to protect yourself. Steps to prevent tularemia. Using insect repellent, wearing gloves when handling sick or dead animals, avoid mowing over dead animals. That's from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Up to 80% of cases lead to skin ulcers and swollen tender glands. Effects from the other types include painful red eyes with yellow discharge, a sore throat, stomach pain, nausea and vomiting, diarrhea, a dry cough, difficulty breathing, sharp chest pain, and weight loss. Because it is rare and its symptoms can be mistaken for other common illnesses, tularemia can be difficult to diagnose. The CDC recommends sharing any likely exposures with healthcare providers to help with the diagnosis. If untreated, tularemia has a human mortality rate of 5% to 15%, which can be lowered to about 1% by antibiotic treatment, according to state health officials. And here's a more political story about our governor, Pritzker, headlined, "Pritzker calls out do-nothing Dems in a fiery New Hampshire speech." Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker sharply criticized fellow Democrats on Sunday for not doing enough to oppose President Donald Trump, drawing a clear divide between himself and other high-profile Democrats seen as future presidential contenders. Pritzker delivered the keynote address at the New Hampshire Democratic Party's McIntyre-Shaheen 100 Club dinner, the latest and most high-profile in a series of speeches this year. While Pritzker continued to attack Trump, he also focused on what he says are shortcomings in his own party, assailing Democrats for listening to a bunch of know-nothing political types instead of everyday Americans. Without naming names, he called out Democrats, quote, "flocking to podcasts and cable news shows to admonish fellow Democrats for not caring enough about the struggles of working families." He says, "those same do-nothing Democrats want to blame our losses on our defense of black people, of trans kids, of immigrants, instead of their own lack of guts and gumption," Pritzker said. The second-term governor has yet to say whether he will run for that office again in 2026, but the billionaire Hyatt heir has been laying the groundwork for a potential presidential campaign for years. Notably, California Governor Gavin Newsom, another high-profile 2028 contender, said on his podcast recently that the case of Kilmar Abrego Garcia, a Maryland man mistakenly deported to El Salvador and detained at one point in a notorious megaprison, was a, quote, distraction from issues such as tariffs, etc. Newsom also said on his podcast's inaugural episode that he opposes trans athletes competing in women's sports. Polling suggests immigration is Trump's strongest issue and that a majority of Democrats also oppose trans participation in women's sports. Pritzker on Sunday night said it was no time for Democrats to be in despair. "Never before in my life have I called for mass protests, for mobilization, for disruption, but now I am," he said, stressing that the party must castigate them on the soapbox and then punish them at the ballot box. Pritzker has already spoken this year at the Human Rights Campaign's Los Angeles dinner and is scheduled to headline a Minnesota Democratic dinner in June. He drew national attention in February when he used part of his joint budget and state of the state address to draw a parallel between Trump's rhetoric and the rise of Nazi Germany. On Sunday, Pritzker again invoked his Jewish faith, criticizing Trump's efforts to deport foreign students who participated in pro-Palestinian demonstrations. He called on Trump to stop tearing down the Constitution in the name of my ancestors, a line that drew a standing ovation from the crowd. But Pritzker was also adamant in calling out the do-nothing Democrats, asserting that while the party may need to fix our messaging and strategy, our values are exactly where they should be. He added, "We will never join so many Republicans in a special place in hell reserved for quislings and cowards." Lou D'Alessandro, who retired from the New Hampshire State Senate last year after 5 decades in public service and met Pritzker in Chicago years ago, said the Illinois governor, quote, has all the ingredients to make it to the big time. He's very quick on his feet, very gregarious, he said. But any Democrat who wants to win in 2028 has their work cut out for them, he said. They've got to reintroduce themselves to the grassroots. They've got to let people know Democrats care about them, or they're going to be in big trouble. Last year's featured speaker in the McIntyre-Shaheen 100 Club dinner was Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, who went on to become his party's vice presidential nominee. The annual event is especially significant among state Democrat fundraisers, given New Hampshire's historic role holding the nation's first presidential primary. Though Democrats last year moved South Carolina ahead at the behest of former President Joe Biden. The first 100 Club dinner was held in 1959 to promote the presidential candidacy of John F. Kennedy. In 2020, speakers included 10 Democratic candidates for president. I've already read a couple of health-related articles, but I think this one about measles is really important. The headline, the U.S. has nearly 900 measles cases and 10 states have active outbreaks. Here's what to know. With 1/5 of states seeing active measles outbreaks, the U.S. is nearing 900 cases, according to figures posted April 25th by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The CDC's confirmed measles cases count is 884, triple the amount seen in all of 2024. The vast majority, 646, are in Texas, where an outbreak in the western part of the state that's approaching the three-month mark. Two unvaccinated elementary school-aged children died from measles-related illnesses in the epicenter in West Texas, and one adult in New Mexico who was not vaccinated died of a measles-related illness. Other states with active outbreaks, defined as three or more cases, include Indiana, Kansas, Michigan, Montana, New Mexico, Oklahoma, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Tennessee. North America has two other ongoing outbreaks, one in Ontario, Canada, has resulted in 1,020 cases from mid-October through April 23rd. And as of Friday, April 25th, the Mexican state of Chihuahua had 605 measles cases, according to data from the state health ministry. The World Health Organization said cases in Mexico are linked to the Texas outbreak. Measles is caused by a highly contagious virus that's airborne and spreads easily when infected person breathes, sneezes, or coughs. It is preventable through vaccines and has been considered eliminated from the U.S. since the year 2000. As the virus takes hold in other U.S. communities with low vaccination rates, health experts fear the virus that the spread could stretch on for a year. Here's what else you need to know about measles in the U.S. How many measles cases are there in Illinois? State health officials confirmed Illinois' first measles case of the year, April 23rd, in an unvaccinated adult in Marion in southern Illinois. The health department provided the additional details about the location of the unidentified individual and the person's vaccination status in a health advisory sent to local health departments and healthcare providers. The advisory also listed 8 locations where people might have been exposed to the individual with measles from April 7th to April 15th, 3 laundromats, a Walmart, a Kroger, a gym, and a restaurant, all in Marion, and the clinic where the person sought care, which was not identified in the advisory. State public health officials recently unveiled an online dashboard tool that allows users to look up measles vaccination rates and data about the risk of outbreaks at individual schools across the state. Last year, Chicago saw its first measles case since 2019, which resulted in 67 cases, according to health officials. How many in Texas and New Mexico? Texas state health officials said April 25th that there are 22 new cases of measles since April 22nd, bringing the total to 646 across 26 counties, most of them in West Texas. Hospitalizations were steady April 25th at 64 throughout the outbreak. State health officials estimated about 1% of cases, fewer than 10, are actively infectious. 61% of Texas's cases are in Gaines County, population 22,892, where the virus started spreading in a close-knit, under-vaccinated Mennonite community. The county has had 393 cases since January, just over 1.5% of the county's residents. The April 3rd death in Texas of an 8-year-old child, according to Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy, Jr., health officials in Texas said the child did not have an underlying health condition and died of what the child's doctor described as measles pulmonary failure. An unvaccinated child with no underlying conditions died of measles in Texas in late February, Kennedy said. Age 6. New Mexico announced one new case April 25th, bringing the state's local to 66. 7 people have been hospitalized since the outbreak started. Most of the state's cases are in Lea County. 3 are in Eddy County, and Chavez and Doña Ana counties have 1 each. State health officials say the cases are linked to the Texas outbreak based on genetic testing. New Mexico reported a measles-related death in an adult on March 6. How many in Indiana? Indiana confirmed 2 more cases on April 21st in an outbreak that has sickened 8 in Allen County in the northeast part of the state. 5 are unvaccinated minors, 3 are adults whose vaccination status is unknown. The cases have no link to the other outbreaks, the Allen County Department of Health said. And this article goes on to talk about cases in all the related states. So I suppose the watchword is vigilance. Now the obituaries, it looks like there's only one in the paper today. Timothy Mervyn Bowman passed away peacefully with his family at his side on Saturday, April 26, 2025, and no other details are provided. How about the weather? This unusually warm weather is going to come to an end. It looks like showers and heavy thunderstorms are in the forecast for today. Little or no sunshine with 100% chance of precipitation and average relative humidity 75. We're talking about the Decatur area. Drying conditions are poor. A thunderstorm around early tonight. I see rain in the forecast today, tonight, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. The high will only be 66 with a low of 44, so a big drop compared to yesterday's temperature in the mid-80s.